There's got to be an explanation to all these UFO sightings, right? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast is being brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.
Well, I was really thinking a lot over the last, 12 hours, not 24 hours. But since last night, I woke up twice during the course of the night, and I just had that impending sense of doom that I get every now and again. And I was so grateful to have a military that stands on the wall and that would never, they just don't stop paying attention. It doesn't matter whether the commanders are right or wrong. And we have constant conversations in my house about whether or not the military has been altered dramatically through a lot of this woke nonsense. And also, you have to remember that they drummed a lot of people out of the military over the COVID jab. And so now you have a military that's comprised of people who willingly took that jab. And you basically removed all the people who stood up and said, I don't want to take that. I've had COVID or whatever their reason was. So you have a military that may not be independent in thinking, but is a military ever. Anyway, so that woke me up during the middle of the night, along with the idea that we now have people left in Haiti. We seem to have a new track record of whether or not we're going to get Americans out of these areas when the military in those countries, or gangs in the case of Haiti, take over the government. And that causes me great concern, as it should you. You know, I revealed yesterday that I do foster a child in Haiti. But it's certainly very different when Haitians go through these things than when Americans may be left behind. And to listen to the State Department today say that they didn't even know how many people were there was very concerning. Very concerning. So I do have Congressman Matt Gaetz coming on regarding the incoming migrant wave that, especially here in Florida, we're anticipating, since these gangs have all, you know, taken over in the half of the island, because, you know, the island itself is a beautiful place, half of it with a semi-stable government and a lot of tourism and other things in Dominica, and then you've got Haiti, which is a disaster. So we're going to talk with Congressman Gaetz about that. And I'm definitely going to ask, you know, what is this new strategy or lack of strategy that leaves Americans behind or tells me they don't know how many Americans are there? And then I heard the most awful, awful statement where I don't even know if it was Antony Blinken or some other state, spokesperson said, like, we told people not to go to Haiti and to get out of Haiti. Okay, but that doesn't absolve us of the responsibility to rescue people who did go there. People go there to protect innocent lives in orphanages, people who are of Haitian descent but are Americans, maybe there trying to save their families. And to hear this insensitive and actually absurd statement that we told people to get out, and if they didn't get out, oh well. No, that's not how it works. The fact that I have a United States passport, that I'm a citizen of the United States of America, I expect my government to rescue me if I get caught somewhere very unsavory. Now, I am responsible to do everything I can to get to safety, but I'm guessing that anybody who's still there couldn't get out. I don't think they like said, oh, this will be fun. Let's hang around. You know, they got four competing gangs running recklessly through Port-au-Prince, the capital. No, I don't believe anybody is just thumbing their nose at rescue. If they're there still, as Mitch Albom was, the author and the person who has set up orphanages in Haiti, I don't think that he should have been left there. And Corey Mills, the representative, sent in a rescue team, as he has done before in Israel, in Afghanistan. Why is it that we don't seem to have that part of our act together at all? These are the kinds of things that are going to play into the next election. Mark my words. If Donald Trump is as smart as I think he is going to hammer home the fact that the Biden administration leaves Americans behind, and even its own military doesn't seem to know how to evacuate anybody from anywhere. I mean, Haiti is a stone's throw away. The idea that we would not have had a plan ready. I mean, how many times have we seen the government of Haiti upside down and we've needed to rescue people? Dozens in my lifetime. I got an email from one of my listeners who's a former, you know, State Department employee for many, many years. And he said, take note that he never imagined that he would see people who have zero military experience, the likes of which President Joe Biden and Antonio Guterres, who's the UN Secretary General, and Senator Chuck Schumer and Antony Blinken, lecturing Benjamin Netanyahu on how to, you know, safeguard the Israelis when we can't even safeguard Americans. We don't rescue them. We don't bring them home. That speech by Chuck Schumer yesterday on the floor of the Senate was disgraceful. Literally blaming Benjamin Netanyahu and telling the Israeli people that they better get rid of him. I believe that's election interference of the worst kind over an ally. What's going on in Washington right now is grotesque. And people like me have to call it out. It's not fun watching Americans left behind in numerous war-torn areas. But looking at what's going on in Haiti right now makes my hair hurt. So we'll have Congressman Representative Matt Gaetz will be on to talk about it. And I'm just so disappointed in the Republicans. And now we got this Republican judge in Georgia who said, no, she can stay on the case. Does anybody believe if the opposite were happening and we had a case against a Democrat former president and the shenanigans that went on with Fannie Willis and her boyfriend there, does anybody really believe that a Democrat-appointed judge would say, oh, it's okay, she can stay on the case? Of course not. They know how to fight and they know how to stand up for what's right. Republicans, not so much. Poor Matt Gaetz. He's going to have to hear my mouth, but he's a tough guy. Anyway, don't forget to download the 850 app. That way you could have all of the podcasts and everything else. Join the contest. Do that kind of important stuff on your app or on your laptop. If not, check out our website on a regular basis, 850WFTL.com. Quick break. I'll be back with Representative Matt Gaetz.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. As I promised, I have Representative Matt Gaetz on the line from Florida's District Number 1. And before I go crazy, Matt, because I'm just fit to be tied, I do have to say I had no idea that Ginger could sing like that. She sang the national anthem a couple of weeks ago where I was, and it was amazing. Very well done. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. Ginger is quite the talented singer, and I'm super proud of her, and I'm very lucky to be married to her. With all that we're facing, though, I'm not going to blame you for going a little crazy. I feel that way myself as our southern border is under attack, and as Florida now is going to face a real influx of these Haitian migrants.
Yeah, which we have historically, but there never seems to be a plan. And this idea that with the influx of illegal immigration in this country right now, that we're going to have more, protected status being afforded to this group of Haitians. And first and foremost, are we going to get the Americans out of there that are stuck there? Because I just heard the State Department say, oh, too bad. You shouldn't have been there.
Yeah, right now we simply don't have the capabilities, executed to go and rescue our Americans. And it's such a bad situation. My colleague Corey Mills went and conducted his own evacuation of Americans. He's got a real passion for getting people out of harm's way who are in it. He did the same in Israel and has done it in Haiti. Frankly, he's done more than the Biden administration has. And my concern is that if you get thousands of these folks on the water coming our direction, you could really put the Coast Guard in bad situation. Our Palm Beach, Broward, and Martin County sheriff's offices don't have real water capabilities to go and do interdictions at sea. And if these people get 2 feet on the ground in Florida, you're absolutely right. They're going to be in the same broken asylum system that we've seen get all these folks from the southern border distributed throughout the country with no real risk to them that they're going to have to be deported and go back to where they came from.
Yeah, it's absolutely frightening. But, I'm stuck on the fact that we don't have a State Department and a military that's ready to rescue anybody who has an American passport and is currently in Haiti. And to be so glib about it, as the spokesman was this morning and said, well, we told you to get out. Okay, but that doesn't negate the fact that we have some responsibility. Do I have to stop traveling because you guys won't come rescue me?
That is the condition, and it's important to remember a lot of the people who were in Haiti are there on mission trips or there to help people get water and food and medicine, and they're doing it out of the grace of service. Those folks have to register with the State Department, and a competent State Department would always have the contingency plans to rescue Americans, to ensure that we could get to them or at least could get them to a centralized location where we could ensure their safety. Instead, we have a State Department that's more interested in pushing the LGBTQ agenda in our relationship with others than on the blocking and tackling the basic capabilities that ensures the protection for Americans. I do also have to add, Joyce, there's something that Joe Biden could do right now to deter this wave of Haitian migrants and to increase the interdictions at sea so that these folks don't get to Florida. He should declare an anticipated mass maritime migration. Mm-hmm. If he did that under a law, then we could use the Navy, gray-hulled naval vessels, to interdict these Haitian chugs, to hold the folks that were interdicted by the Coast Guard, and then to repatriate these people back at Port-au-Prince. The key thing for your listenership to understand is if they get to land, they're probably going to be here forever. If we interdict them at sea, we have the authorities to take them right back to Haiti. So the most important thing is to ensure we have the interdictions at sea. Ron DeSantis has done the right thing, deploying hundreds of state National Guardsmen and state police, but they can only go out 3 miles. And so to extend our border, to extend the protections of Florida, I've been calling on President Biden to declare this anticipated mass migration over water.
Are you kidding? I mean, he probably is giddy with excitement that it's happening. I'm just so disappointed. I got to tell you, in Republicans, you have to feel the same way I do, because I know you're a fighter, a scrapper. And I look at this judge in Fulton County who decided, oh, no, you know, Fannie Willis can stay on the case. Do you believe for a second that a Democrat-appointed judge in the same position on the other side would allow that? Why is there such a lack of guts and courage in the Republican Party?
It's disappointing to see this judge fail to appreciate the grave harm to the justice system done when prosecutors are, you know, looking like they're pursuing cases for their own financial benefit, for the financial benefit of their lovers, as opposed to the true interests of justice. And the true interest of justice would never demand a RICO prosecution in Georgia against Rudy Giuliani, President Trump, Mark Meadows. It's just ridiculous. And I think that the decision ultimately won't hurt President Trump a great deal, because the court did allow for leave to appeal. And so this is likely going to be reviewed by a number of appellate courts. And I don't think there's going to be any trial of any defendants in Georgia anytime soon, based on the way the judge crafted the ruling today. But obviously an impartial jurist, unbridled by any politics, would see this as an obvious case of prosecutorial misconduct that should result in the dismissal. I mean, if ginning up a prosecution to get money to your boyfriend isn't prosecutorial misconduct, I don't know what is.
Yeah, what is exactly? Let me ask you, I mean, obviously you're on that in the people's side. I think the House is where the real business of America happens. The Senate is some sort of deliberative body. But were you as insulted as I was by the majority leader, Chuck Schumer, standing up there literally telling the Israelis to overthrow their own election? What's going on in Washington?
Yeah, I just assumed that, you know, the worst attacks against Israel from some of my Democrat colleagues were over, that at a time when our ally was under siege, they would suspend some of the anti-Israel stuff that we've seen become too much a feature of the Democratic Party. But Chuck Schumer was one of the people breathlessly concerned about election interference in the United States. And then for him to go and engage in explicit election interference in Israel is beyond the pale. And it's actually going to do a lot of harm to our country, because now other democracies are going to view their partnership with the United States and embracing, you know, voting and embracing political discourse and allowing dissent, they're going to view that as very temporary, because at any moment you can have someone in a leadership position like Chuck Schumer just demand that your government be thrown out. And that's not the way we should treat fellow democracies. And it certainly was a low point for the United States Senate.
Yeah, insulting. You know, watching some of the shenanigans that goes on there in Washington is just becoming so stressful. I mean, do you find that people are not even paying attention? With the exception of activists like myself and you, the majority of the American people are just rolling their eyes at this point. They can't trust their own government. They're afraid. I had a person ask me yesterday, do I think the military will turn their guns on us if they're told to? And I didn't have an answer. How about that?
It is indicative of how under siege the American people feel right now. You know, we've got our own military failing to meet their recruiting goals. That's impacting our capability and what we can do, and how we can hold the high ground for future generations. Moreover, just the American family feels under siege, because we've got these interest rates rising so fast as a consequence of out-of-control government spending, massive debts, $2.5 trillion mounting annual deficits, and people are having to bridge from one paycheck to the next more with credit cards, and the APR on those credit cards is now rising higher and higher, and so people are feeling the squeeze. It's my hope that folks appreciate that the conditions we're facing are not by accident. They're a direct consequence of the policy choices being made in Washington. Joe Biden is making choices that embarrass us around the world, that make us less prosperous here at home. And I think you've laid out an appropriate critique of the Republicans who have facilitated that, many of whom are elected in Congress. And when they vote for the budgets that don't secure the border but continue the bureaucracy, they're part of the problem. And we've got to get a lot tougher in the House. Our margins are growing smaller. One of my colleagues just announced that he's going to be retiring. So on days we'll have maybe a one-vote majority in the House. But I think we ought to use it for leverage, and we ought to use it against the features of this Biden government that have really been turned against the people. There's no other way to say it.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, even when Democrats are in the minority, they fight tooth and nail to get as much accomplished that they want accomplished as possible. You guys, even if you have a substantial majority, are so worried about what people think of you. I shouldn't say you, because you're not like that. But I mean, with very few exceptions, where's Ken Buck going? Why would somebody make a move like that right now, knowing what a slim majority you have? I'm just so disappointed over and over again. And it's got to be brutal for you to have to sit there.
It's incredibly disappointing that we're losing Ken Buck, you know, especially because on matters of fiscal policy and budget, balanced budgets, yeah, he was actually an ally. We disagreed on things like the Mayorkas impeachment, which I supported and he did not. But the other key distinction between Republicans and Democrats is I've noticed when Democrats are in power, they're actually willing to put their majority at risk to accomplish their goals.
Yes.
They're willing to lose elections in order to drag the country very far left. Meanwhile, Republicans are so worried about the next election, so worried about criticism or offending people, that we don't pursue our goals with the boldness and the courage and the persistence and the relentlessness that we often see from the Democrats. So when they're in power, they jerk us far left. And then when we're in power, we seem to be willing to allow the country to drift left at just a slower pace. That's what I'm trying to reverse. That's why I'm trying to get better people in the United States Congress who embrace a fighting. And while I don't have a ton of leverage as one member, I've tried to use the leverage I have to try to get the Congress back into a fighting posture for the American people.
Yeah, but you got to have the hide of a rhinoceros. I mean, I've been doing what I do for the last 33 years. And if you're going to let people's words hurt you and take you off track, this is not an arena you should be in. So you just, just keep it up. Fight. I don't know what else to say. There's not a lot of fighters there. If we lose one or two more, it's pretty much game over. And even if we get Donald Trump back in the White House, which I'm convinced we have to do, he needs Congress to be there with him. Tell me something good before you hang up. Tell me something that'll make me feel better.
Well, I think that we are ascendant politically in the MAGA movement. And something I saw recently, polling just showing how many working class African Americans and Hispanics are coming to our party. I mean, if Donald Trump gets 23% of the African American vote, like we saw in a recent New York Times poll, we could have a historic, not only a landslide victory, but a mandate to put the policies to work that actually help the patriotic driven people of this country that have made it great. So while the conditions we face are challenging, the political momentum that is generating is one that I hope we can capitalize on better. We were not ready for the first term of President Trump in the Congress. We had too much Mitch McConnellism, too much Paul Ryanism. My hope is that in this next wave, we are better prepared for the second term of Donald Trump than we were the first.
So are you satisfied with Mike Johnson? You think he's the man for the
job?
No,
we need
right
more.
Now.
We need more out of Mike Johnson. We have not been willing to use our leverage. And when we funded the government without demanding a secure border, it was a failure, in my opinion. We've got to do better.
Yeah. All right. Matt, thanks so much. Always appreciate talking to you. Keep up the good fight. You know we got your back.
I appreciate you, Joyce. Thanks so much for all you're doing.
All right. You take care. Listen, I need fighters, man. And they could be a little rogue and renegade like Donald Trump and Matt Gaetz. But if not, then we are really going to perish. All right, let me take a quick time out right now. Stay where you are. I'll be right back. So the other thing, I always talk about the military on Fridays. And thank goodness I don't have to report any troops that perished. But the I don't know how many of you, well, actually, my audience, probably all of you, either read the book Black Hawk Down or you watched the movie by Ridley Scott's, I mean, it was an incredible movie. And we all pretty much understand what happened in the Battle of Mogadishu. 18 American troops got killed, like 70 plus wounded. And it was literally the worst day for the U.S. military since the end of the Vietnam War. Not because we don't have heroic troops, because we do. But no amount of heroism and sacrifice was able to keep this vicious warlord, the Somali warlord. They were shooting down the helicopters. The troops were surrounded, fighting for their lives until help could arrive. And we watched this on the news. You know, I will never forget watching images of United States servicemen's bodies being desecrated and the humiliation of having to negotiate for the release of the helicopter pilot, who I still remember, Michael Durant. And then, you know, President Bill Clinton, calls off the mission in the middle of, screaming and stomping his foot, criticizing his Secretary of Defense, who at the time was Les Aspin, saying like, oh, well, you know, they didn't have the right troops there. They didn't have enough troops there. And, you know, I'm watching how it's Democrat administrations. They're feckless when they leave. They're feckless in any kind of involvement. They're the ones who literally gave Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda the idea that they could do what they did to the greatest country, in my opinion, on earth. And then, of course, you know, it was years later that bin Laden would say, hey, when what went down in Somalia went down, that's when I said, okay, now it's time to act. America's weak. There's a direct link between when bad guys think we're weak and their decision to attack. And they attacked us in our own homeland on 9/11. But it all began with a United Nations-sponsored plan to send help, particularly food and medical stuff, in the face of a humanitarian crisis in Somalia. Does any of this start to ring a bell? Do you understand that this floating peer nonsense that Joe Biden was talking about at the State of the Union address, this proposal to build a peer in Gaza for humanitarian supplies, what could go wrong, right? An entire brigade of U.S. Army transportation personnel plus U.S. Navy assets have already been dedicated to the venture. So does everybody out there have no memory at all? Do you think there's no risk involved? Or do you realize that this could be a repeat of what happened in Somalia? The internet is already exploding with discussions of how crazy this whole peer thing is, the project. But even if you just do a cursory examination of what is being proposed. The U.S. military used to be very, very good at this kind of thing. They've been doing it at least since the D-Day invasion of Normandy back in the 40s, 1944, right? But come on. The IDF is a little busy right now and will not be able to help with all these supplies that have to be distributed in the face of opposition from Hamas. Are the Egyptians going to change their minds and they're going to take on some responsibility? Because if Egypt were inclined to do that, we wouldn't need a peer. So what Joe Biden has proposed has no practical purpose at all. And without a ceasefire, which there's not going to be, this is going to be really scary. And I'm fearful. I really am. I'm not the first person thinking this either. I read it in The Spectator last night or this morning. an article by James McGee. This could very well be a disaster of the kind that Black Hawk Down was all over again. This country can't stand it. Not now. It would break us, and it would certainly send a message to all the bad guys out there. Anyway, I got to get on a lighter note. So Derek's going to call in just a few moments, and we'll talk a little bit, fluff, a little frivolity, because it's just overwhelming. It really is. And I can't go out of this week's shows like that. So stay right where you are. Don't forget, coming up after me, Eric Erickson, Joe Pags, and Lars Larson. And then we are officially in the weekend. And we'll all be back on Monday, if it be his will and he delays his coming. But I still have this segment left with Derek. Stay right where you are.
They say that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. But in the case of Derek Kaufman, the apple rolled all the way to L.A. The one thing Derek and his mother share in common, however, is the love for breaking news. TMZ is breaking news faster than the New York Times. So sit back and enjoy the news from Hollywood, as only the Kaufman family can bring it.
So last night, the Kaufman family in L.A. called me so that my grandson Carter could sing a song by the Carpenters to me. And it was beyond cute, but now I couldn't get back to sleep. Derek, you got to call earlier.
I know. Well, I can't get the song out of my head either. And singing the Carpenters around this office doesn't make you the coolest guy in the room.
Probably not.
But I just, him singing Sing It Strong was making me laugh so much I had to call you.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was awesome. I appreciate it. He's no Jelly Roll, though, you know. Listen, I didn't even know who Jelly Roll was until a couple of weeks ago, but this guy is really now a crusader against drug addiction and apparently having a great impact. What do you know about him?
You know, he is a huge artist. He's new on my radar as well, but he's rising in prominence. He's really a rising star, and he's a huge mental health advocate through his music. Mm-hmm. He overcame drug addiction. He spent some time behind bars, and he's really a guy who inspired a lot of people to get their life on track, and he inspired this little girl who drew pictures of Jelly Roll and Buddy XO, his girlfriend or wife. And she got in trouble for picking them as her inspiration. And her doodle is, it's sweet. It's like a little black and white thing that she put on shirts. And the school said, these aren't inspirations. You're not allowed to use them for your project. And he stepped up big time for her. And he is absolutely backing this little girl who's selling these shirts to sort of raise money for these issues.
Yeah. Well, he was on Capitol Hill yesterday. And I'm telling you, his testimony, because, I'm a political junkie, and I watched a good deal of his testimony. I mean, he was a drug dealer, a gang member. Now he's a country singer. He gave up rap. And it was very compelling. And we need more voices like that in this movement.
I completely agree. Look, this is a guy who didn't have the greatest start, but life is long. And, Harvey says this all the time. You can't take a snapshot of someone and write them off. And when he was just dealing drugs and getting tattoos, it looked like things were tending towards one direction. But then he really turned it around, and we should celebrate that. And it's okay that kids in school see those stories as inspirations that they are. And I think the school was out of line to say, like, you should pick role models who have always been on the straight and narrow. I don't think everyone's path is like that, and Jelly Roll fits right in. And he's a lovable guy when you see him speak.
Yeah, he's a, I'm not big on face tattoos personally, but I was so impressed with the content of what he was saying. There's so many artists who just end up dead and never talk about it. Prince, the list is long.
For sure. And his body tells a whole story, so the face tattoos are part of it. You don't see that often in country music, but on Jelly Roll you do.
Right. Well, country music is changing right before our very eyes. All music is. And, I'm having a tough time keeping up. But thank goodness I have young kids and young grandkids. But Bradley Cooper, like, what is up with his take? Gigi Hadid, that's the best he could come up with?
Are you questioning the taste of Bradley Cooper with Gigi Hadid?
Yes.
I got to say, Gigi may not be your cup of tea, but she's a lot of America's cup of tea. And this is a guy who is closing in on 50. You know, he's not a young man, and she is a young, hot model. She's a mom as well, so she's not like, it's not like she's some 20-year-old. She's matured now, but come on. Are you really questioning whether Gigi Hadid is fun to kiss?
Well, she may be, but I mean, one would see a man of his sort of long-standing career and I don't know. I didn't expect to see him with a, like a model. But I guess, hey, look, you know, the former president was married to a model, and I had a lot of respect for Melania.
Hey, listen, before this, he had Irina Shayk, is the mother of his children. I think Bradley Cooper likes models.
Yeah.
sort of. When you're in the upper echelons of Hollywood, it is one of the privileges that goes along with it. You know, and he's kind of like in that Leo DiCaprio territory, where he's a handsome leading man, and he's taking the spoils that go along with that.
I guess so. And what did you think of the Oscars? I mean, I don't watch that stuff, as you well know. Never really did after the Indian, after the Native American refused Marlon Brando's award, I stopped watching the Oscars for the most part. But they were, again, so ridiculously political. You know, why does everybody have to get up and make a statement about Israel?
Yeah, you know, there are some of those political speeches. I enjoyed watching Oppenheimer just roll through. I thought it was a great movie, but, you know, Jimmy Kimmel couldn't resist reading Trump's tweet in the middle of the ceremony and taking a pot shot and saying, isn't it past your jail time? You know, it invariably tends towards the sort of hard left that is the bulk of Hollywood, and you shouldn't expect anything less because Jimmy Kimmel, he finds it hard to resist those moments, and he just went for it.
But it's not even funny. And what it does is it makes someone like me, who doesn't want to watch it in the first place, absolutely refuse. I watched for a few minutes because a cousin of Poppy's was up for a documentary Oscar. And so I was trying to watch it, but it's just not fun.
You didn't even see Ryan Gosling do I'm Just Ken or Al Pacino weirdly read the best picture and say, my eyes see Oppenheimer. It had some wonderful, memorable moments. So don't tune out on the Oscars just because of a few political speeches.
A few. All right. I'll try not to. What else is going on? I know that, you know, there's certainly Hollywood is knee deep in politics these days. It can't be avoided. But the idea that you can't even go to a movie without wondering, like, is Robert De Niro in it? You know, is there someone I don't like?
Yeah, you know, listen, there's a lot going on, and there's a lot that is, you know, check out the website. Today is a good mix of things if you want to break from all the politics. There's a lot going on in the Rust shooting case with Alec Baldwin, a lot of interesting legal issues involving whether that gun could have fired without him pulling the trigger. So go check that out. He's really fighting hard, and that's going to be a very interesting case moving forward.
And you guys cover a lot of these crazy violent scenes in the subways and things like that. I mean, you know, as we said a couple of weeks ago, everything is being recorded on somebody's cell phone now, but it's too much. It's so painful to watch some of that young girl who was beaten to, you know, banged her head against the ground. And you end up watching this stuff. You have nightmares for days.
That's horrific. It's horrific. And now everything is just captured, right? I mean, we see so many plane videos. You see those vicious beatings in schools, and it's sort of just dominates your psyche. You're right. It's hard to unsee these things, but they're in your scroll as you're watching just Instagram or on X or anything. It's hard to avoid them if you follow the news at all.
Really? So what did Catch Me Outside name her baby? She had a little girl, right?
She did. She did. So everyone is very excited. She posted the first, this is the birth of her first child. And, you know, she leads a pretty tumultuous life, but everyone's really happy. This is someone who really pulled herself up, and now she's got a baby girl.
Yeah, well, good. I hope she baby girl doesn't do the same things her mom did. All right, kid, thanks so much. I will talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Take care.
Take care. All right, and that does it for me this week. I needed it to be a little lighter. Thank you for your time this time. Until next time, my plan is to be back here on Monday at 3 o'clock, if it be his will and he delays his coming. What lies behind us and what lies ahead of us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. So wherever you are, just be yourself. Everybody else is taken. And then may God bless you. May God bless Israel. And shut up, Chuck Schumer. And may God bless the United States of America. See you on Monday. Be safe.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast has been brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.